Terry? Lisa?
Here.
And Dennis, here. We have a quorum. We have five people of our seven. We'll go to item two, the consent agenda. I'll take a motion for approval of the minutes from the November 13th meeting.
That's based on the fact that I had.
Joby, I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from November 13th.
And the second was?
Jason,
okay. We can take a roll call on that. Rolf?
Aye.
Joby?
Aye.
Jason?
Aye.
And Jill, not here yet. Terry? Not here. Lisa?
Aye.
Dennis, aye. Approval of the minutes for November 13 passes 5-0. I'll entertain a motion for approval of the minutes from November 17th.
Jason, so moved.
Jason, okay. I'll any second?
Second.
Is that Lisa?
Yes.
Okay, we'll take a roll call on that for approval of the November 17 minutes. Rolf?
Unlock your phone this time.
Aye.
Joby?
Aye.
Jason?
Aye.
And Jill's not here yet. Terry? Lisa?
Aye.
And Dennis, aye. Meeting minutes approval passes 5-0. Now, item three, we've got Innovest quarterly report. Troy Jensen and Rick Rogers. I don't know that too many people know who Rick is. Troy or Rick want to just maybe give a quick what's going on.
Richard, I think Dennis just said you're not as famous as you think you are.
Well, good morning. It's nice to meet you all. Rick Rogers, I'm a partner and consultant at Innovest. I started with Innovest in 2006 and have worked collaboratively with Troy for many, many years. I had the pleasure of meeting Dennis at the NAGDA conference this last year and just pleased to be here.
Thanks, Rick. I will give a quick update as well. Those of you that know Gordon Toole, last time we talked about he had a mishap on his bicycle and some pretty significant injuries and a lengthy recovery that he's still going through. He is back now in the office, looking good. I think probably the day after it happened, he was in the hospital bed sending emails and on the job. But for him, he's happy to be back in place. He is transitioning a little bit to a reduced schedule, thinking about retirement. And so we wanted to introduce Rick and Adam as part of the relationship here. You'll still see the team approach from Innovest as it had always been, but new faces is a good thing, new perspective as well. Hopefully you can see my screen. Let me know if not, but I will kick off our report, get everything moved around. And a few things to talk about today. One, we are looking for this spring to set a date for the Phoenix area for a public plan event, probably be a one-day focus with some fiduciary topics, investments. We're setting up the logistics of that now, but keep an eye out for emails coming from us on that. And then a couple others down at the bottom. NAGDA is going to be in Florida next year. Rick mentioned it was in San Diego. They go back and forth east and west. Topics and trends for this quarter on the fiduciary side. We started with a timeline here, and it'll be a nice jumping off point. I'll discuss a little bit of what's going on with Innovest as well. Go back to the mid-70s when ERISA was passed and it defined 401k plans, retirement for corporate world for the most part. has some other pieces, 401A, 457, those are the public plan, 403Bs for education. And as you can tell kind of by the code, it's section 401, subsection K, that's the parentheses, wasn't really a legislation passed with the intent of setting up this broad world of multi-trillion dollar retirement savings. But that's the way it worked out. We now have defined contribution plans that replaced, for the most part, defined benefit pensions. And that evolution of what's been happening over several decades at this point is what we wanted to focus on. One, understand the context and know what we're looking at, what that means for us as fiduciaries and thinking about participants and their best interests. But two, recognizing the threats and what happens in that part of the industry. Anytime you've got dollars as a target, that means that your participants, as they build those balances, as the plan continues to grow, become something of a get for those in the industry that are looking just to profit off of plans. So we talked last quarter about fiduciary education, the importance of maintaining that focus on participants, keeping our eye on their best interests, doing that in a prudent, expert way. In the mid-90s is when independent firms started to replace some of the proprietary stuff. When I say proprietary, I mean when you get your plan set up early on in the 80s, it would be whatever company provided the plan would say, well, yeah, we can do the investments too. They have no incentive to scrutinize those investments because those are profitable as well. There's expenses that come out of those investments. That's usually the biggest piece of any plan's expense and cost. So independent advisors started to crop up and say, well, wait, there's a different way to do this. We can provide you advice without selling you product, without pushing something on you. And that then gives you unbiased, unconflicted guidance as to how to set that up. That's gone in a pretty steady direction for a number of years, but more recently, maybe the last decade or so, started to shift back in the other direction. On our part of the industry, we've seen big aggregator firms buy up smaller shops. The goal then is to combine all those assets, turn it into a revenue stream rather than looking out for best interest. It doesn't fit with what Innovest is, and it doesn't fit with what you should be as committee members and thinking about that. So we, in our process, go back to the 1990s. We're coming up on 30 years as a firm. Founders are still here day-to-day working with clients, but we're starting to hit that point where retirement's on our radar for some of our partners as well. So employee ownership has been a big piece of who we are. That's challenging, though, as retirements happen, people roll off. And so we started looking at about 3 or 4 years ago at a succession plan for Innovest, and options for that were the weekly, sometimes daily calls that we get from outside firms, outside private equity and capital looking to buy in and turn us into something different, or find something that allows Innovest to continue just as it is and stay independent. We landed on actually a client of ours in the family office side, so public personal wealth, family wealth, that sort of approach. Former NFL tight end named Casey Crawford. He had a short NFL career, but I think ended up a Super Bowl winner with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers briefly. After that, left the league and ventured into mortgages as an entrepreneur. Now runs, I think it's the fifth largest mortgage provider in the United States across all 50. So that discussion led to some synergy of where we were headed, where he wanted to be, and we agreed last month to bring him on as a minority owner with Innovest to buy into some of that ownership stake. Allows us to continue with our name, with our contracts, our clients. Everything stays just as it is. All of us as partners stay as we are. And so really, we feel it's a great thing. We mention it because we want to be upfront about it. There'll be outside sources that will tell you something different. It's not. It's pretty straightforward. But that's a piece of change that we want to continue with you. Nothing really impacted from there. So let me pause there. Any questions on that transaction or anything along those lines?
So,
Rolf?
Yeah, I was just wondering, minority owner, how much of an owner is that stake?
It starts at 40%, so he won't have a majority. There are some pretty aggressive revenue targets that he may have an option down the road to buy in at a higher stake in 3 years. So that could become a reality. It's, I'd say unlikely, but it's a possibility within that.
So within 3 years, they could become a majority owner.
Potentially, yes.
Okay. So off the top of your head, I'm not sure. When does our current contract expire with Innovest?
Oh, it's a good question. We may have it in...
I think it's June.
Are we on like a year-to-year now, I think?
I think we've got a one-year contracts for 5 years.
Yeah, it looks like the last one was established in June of 19, so it's been a 6-year, I think, an extension on there.
Right, so this June would be theoretically the end of the plus 1 year.
Correct.
Okay.
We, of course, greatly appreciate the partnership. I think it's been great collaboration. That's where we fit with all of our clients. We want to be that co-fiduciary and side-by-side with you, so we'd love to continue that.
Right. So let's see. This is February, March, April, May. So we will be making a decision, presumptively, come May, as to continuing the plus one with the contract. Does anyone else have any concerns?
Joby's hand is up.
Oh.
Yeah, I just have a question. Obviously, through NAGDA and other connection bases, I've had some people reach out to me, and I'm just a little concerned on there was some type of letter that was going out that didn't go out to this full board. And it went out to other people talking about continuing. Could you explain what that is? Because it was kind of concerning to me that that wasn't communicated to the board, but came to our administrator. And I just don't even know what that letter was. It was about continuing service. So I didn't know if that was trying to continue the contract or could you explain that, Troy?
Yeah, sure. So that essentially what I just described, we made phone calls to each of our clients, and that started with the main contact that we had, or a couple of them in some cases. That can be distributed to the board as necessary. There's nothing there that's confidential or anything along those lines. Essentially, it's what I talked about. Everything continues as it is. We wanted to be upfront about that. The SEC regulations, anytime there's a change of ownership, require that we reach out to every client, notify as to what's happening. But in a lot of those cases, it means you have to ask for a new contract or fees change or increase or things like that. Nothing changes here. It really just continues as it is. I've been saying as well, you've always had the right to fire us at any moment. There's nothing that holds you to that. We hold that our relationships, our connections will be the calling card of what we do and form that continuity. So we're really not banking on a contract to hold you to us. It's more to say, if we're not doing the job, let us know. We'll get better, or let us go if you have to. And that doesn't change either.
So,
wait.
Oh.
Go ahead.
I'll wait. Hold on.
Jason.
So just kind of following up on that. So are we being asked to like consent to anything here? And then a follow up to that is, so specifically who was called at the city or on the board and who got the letter here?
Yeah, so
who at City Hall or who on the board?
Right, so we've had the turnover in that role where Art Kuan was there, then Pete Sexton, and then from there, I believe it's Don at this point, Don DePorter, or Lisa. And so we reached out to Don, reached out to Lisa, reached out to Dennis as the chair of the board in each of those communications to try and see, you know, who is the point of contact to best make that analysis of how to proceed. To your first question, the SEC rules are that we inform you. Our attorneys said, let's use the words "I consent" from each client to make sure that we document that that's been acknowledged, that really nothing changes other than our ownership, the arrangement, the contract that continues on. So consent, we kicked that around back and forth. We didn't feel that it was more an acknowledgement than you're agreeing to anything new. In fact, you're not. But consent means you receive the notification and let's go forward. Does that help, Jason?
It does. I guess I know I haven't seen the letter. I don't know if other board members have. I don't know if city staff have. And so I guess who would be the appropriate person to consent, I guess, on our end? Or do we need board action?
Actually, I think Don has her hand raised.
We did receive something. Don, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that Lisa and I, and maybe Dennis, I don't remember if Dennis was included or not, did receive an email from Troy about this, and we decided to put it on the board agenda so that you guys, so that Troy could discuss this with you guys and you could vote to give that consent or not.
So we didn't feel that it was our, for us to do the, consent, that it should be the board's decision to do the consent. Since you are the fiduciary, since the board is the fiduciary.
So, regarding the letter, I did get a copy of this as a follow-up to a voicemail message that was made from Innovest to Dawn. Pretty much what Troy just told us is there are no changes to the executive team. Our experience will continue unaffected. No changes to our agreement, including the fees. He gave a quick paragraph as to who Casey Crawford and his company, Hebron Investment LLC, is. And then there is, as he mentioned, alluding to, boy, Troy, if you can make that bigger, if the rest of the board wants to maybe get a quick look at this, that's pretty much it, a couple paragraphs. But I don't know that anyone's going to be able to read that.
I'm not sure if I can.
Yeah, Dennis, I was wondering.
I can read it, Dennis.
Yeah.
I can read it. Dennis, maybe the board should discuss, but I'm wondering if maybe we need a little bit of time to digest and have all of us be able to read the letter before. I mean, I don't necessarily have any concerns, right? It's just I haven't seen this material. So I'm wondering, Dennis, what your thoughts would be or any of the other board members on could we schedule a executive – not right now, but could we schedule a just an not a public meeting, but an executive session in the next week or two, and just digest this and get an answer back?
Yeah, I agree with that. And we are going to have a special meeting because if you notice that the last item on our agenda today is to discuss the elections of two board members this year, and we will have to have a special meeting to approve anyone that has shown interest in being on the board, because what usually happens is the board gets to look at the resumes of the people that are applying to be on the board, and then we do have a special meeting to approve that, so that could tie in with giving the rest of the board, a week or two to digest this, and then we can discuss this. At this point, I wish Cassie was here, because if we didn't give consent, then we're at a what do we do now? But with the contract being up for renewal in 4 months, I don't see a reason to push that at this moment because it's on our near horizon. I don't know if we have to give consent or not. I mean, it's a legalese thing that I don't know.
I do.
Go ahead, please.
I want to mention something, and Rolf, I don't know if you want to put your procurement hat on real quick, if you don't mind, but now when something like this usually happens, when there's change in ownership or change in somewhere when we have a current contract, when the city has a contract with someone, we usually just go ahead and go with it because we can't just jump on to somewhere else. So we might say I consent, but we still got to go through the procurement. We still got to make changes with the contract. We got to do all of that. Then we have this 1 year that might be coming up, this 1 year extension, which we will probably have to do a 1 year extension because we'll have to probably do an RFP for the next, to go out for the next contract. So we probably will have, and that takes a year to do it. So we will probably have to do the 1 year extension. So most likely we'll have to consent. But maybe it's just, but yeah, I would say I don't know how necessary it is, Troy, to do this consent right this minute, but, I mean, most likely we would do this, but I think for the board to be comfortable, it would be nice to have some consultation with Cassie. And Cassie wasn't able to make it today, so, but yeah, Rolf. Sorry, Joby. Oh.
Yeah. Basically, if a new owner comes on or it's been taken over the company, the new company is obligated to abide by the contract until the expiration of the contract. So that's not going to change anything as far as the contract is concerned. It's more of just needing some time to see who this owner is and things like that. It's not to terminate any contract at this point or anything like that, I don't think, in my mind. It's just a matter of just digesting the information and need a little bit of time to look at it to decide on the future direction more than anything else, quite honestly.
Yeah, they would still have to go through the whole – we would have to sign something with procurement anyways. They can't – so they have to still go through all that. Anyway, sorry, Joby.
Yeah, Troy, you said something, so I just want to pick your brain here. The SEC regulations just say that you have to inform us, correct? It was your internal lawyers that said they would like us to have an I consent to being informed. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah. SEC rules is anything more than 25% change in ownership requires a notification. Mm-hmm. We went a step beyond that because, one, we think it's good practice. We want you to be fully aware of what's going on. We have ownership changes all the time, as any partnership does. And when we add partners, when partners sell or leave the firm, this one is just bigger than most of those tend to be at 40% instead of a smaller percentage.
Okay. So, but my question to you would be, if we don't give you back the words I consent, we still have a contract with you. We're still doing business with you. You're still going through that. And then we'll see, you know, if we need to do an RFP or we just sign the extensions, or it sounds like we're up, so we're going to have to do an RFI or RFP, and that takes time. So I think what Lisa just said makes sense to me, that we just keep going business as usual and decide as board if we're doing an RFI or an RFP, which takes time, and then we're still going to be clients of Invest. Is that kind of what I'm hearing, Dennis and Troy?
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Is there any way that you could email that letter out to the full board, if you don't mind, just so I'm able to read it a little more?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I should have suggested that from the get-go. I thought it would have been circulated, but we were trying to find the right person to communicate with. And sorry, Lisa, I'm not putting that
should
on
have,
your end.
We should have put it in the – I didn't think about putting it in the handout, so.
Yeah. Okay. And I will say, you know, some of the follow-up questions we've had are, who is Hebron Investment? That was created as an entity just for this transaction. It's more of a transactional on the tax side and everything else. Then, so others that were looking that up, they're saying, we can't find anything on Hebron. Movement Mortgage, Casey Crawford, you'll find more information if you look up for that. They will take seats on a board at the top level, but they won't be involved in the day-to-day. They're not going to be part of the investment committee. Really the effort from both sides was to maintain, just as we are, that independence from both organizationally for Invest, but then in how we serve you and how we have that conflict free. That was where we started. We don't want anything. We're not going to sell you mortgages because that's his other business. Just not going to be part of the reality of it.
And then Dennis, I would just ask from you as chairman, if we need to follow up with Cassidy, if we need to have an executive session since we're talking about contracts and RFP, or just the special meeting that's still open to the public to talk about this.
I am thinking, again, going back to the fact that we have to have an executive meeting to approve the slate for the election. that at that same meeting, say in the next couple of weeks, we discuss this amongst ourselves. And if Lisa, if you could reach out to Cassie and ask her if she could attend that meeting.
Sure.
Because, it'd be nice to have some guidance on that front.
Okay.
Otherwise, hey, Troy, thank you guys for being nice and upfront about this, because this is the way we'd like to find out things, as opposed to hearing it from the guy down the street, so to speak.
Agreed. Yeah, we definitely approach it that way. As I said, the contract is what drives us, but it's important to make sure that we have that buttoned up too. So ultimately, if any questions come up along the way, either before or after that executive session, we're happy to address those. I know it's, if nothing else, of interest and pertinent. One more page here. This is kind of what we had set out to talk about on the topics and trends. This is what's that target that I talked about, is you have lots of extra services, everything from pet insurance to, you know, financial wellness programs, anything that you can attach a dollar figure to. If you've got trillions of dollars of retirement savings, there are people that want to come out and try and pitch that to your participants, to your employees. So that's our role. We want to make sure that we vet anything. And so actually we'll talk today more about the self-directed brokerage side. Each of those pieces, in addition to all the individual investments, becomes part of that fiduciary responsibility of making sure that you're doing the right thing for everybody that's got dollars in the plan. We did the fee review last quarter, so jump forward, no changes to the investment menu. Assets did change modestly for the quarter of fourth quarter. End of third quarter is going to be your left column, September 2025 through December 2025. See at the bottom right, we're still at $355 million and change. Ultimately, that's the net of everything, of course. You have distributions, contributions, any dollars going in and out, and then the growth of assets. Rick will talk about it just a moment, but the markets were really, all the growth came in second and third quarter. First quarter, we had the tariffs announcement and other factors, and then fourth quarter, pullback in technology somewhat. But lots of factors here, ultimately quarter over quarter kind of treading water. Same thing on the 401A side, smaller balance, but similar result. You see that 5.182, just slightly up from where it was at the end of third quarter. And then the executive 401A actually down a little bit, net of everything. Rick.
Great. Would you like me to share?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you. We move on next to capital markets. As you look at this, you might think that perhaps Innovest is celebrating the recent Seattle Seahawks win because of the color scheme here. That's not the case. We've been using the same color scheme for some time. But the other thing that jumps out at you is what a year 2025 was. It was spectacular across the board. One of the longtime trends that reversed last year is that for about the past 10 or so years, domestic stocks have been outperforming international stocks, and you see big gains from both developed as well as emerging markets. Troy mentioned that, you know, it's also clear by comparing the fourth quarter numbers to the calendar year numbers. Troy mentioned that most of the gains happened earlier in the year, and indeed that's the case. Now, particularly with foreign stocks, most of the gains happened in the first quarter. That was in part due to a weakening dollar, but probably a bigger chunk of that was that American companies that either buy products or buy parts for products overseas loaded up on them in the first quarter, trying to get ahead of anticipated impacts of tariffs. And then the tariffs didn't play out as many anticipated. And so we saw some nice gains from domestic and foreign stocks alike in the second and third quarters. So it was a really good year. Another area was fixed income. We hadn't seen 7% out of bonds in some time. In fact, we had a short stretch where we had negative returns out of bonds as the Fed was changing monetary policy and raising interest rates. So the recent interest rate declines certainly helped that market. And just an example, over to the far right, you can see that a 70% stock, 30% bond portfolio produced a return of over 17% last year. This really ties into your large group of participants that are in the target date funds. One of the things that we find with do-it-yourself investors is they tend to be very light on international stocks, whereas target date fund managers put a relatively hefty allocation in both domestic and foreign stocks. So those participants certainly benefited from that, and just the diversification piece as a whole. So looking back at 2025, one of the items that certainly dominated, particularly at the beginning of the year and throughout mid-year, would be the impact of tariffs. And we really didn't see that have a negative impact on the markets, as you just noticed in the previous chart. And then at the bottom, we saw a shift in Fed policy. They tend to monitor closely inflation and unemployment. And both of those numbers are in a relatively good place, inflation being about 3%, unemployment being about 4%. And as a result, we saw 3 interest rate cuts last year. You've probably seen in the news that the current administration is already looking at someone to replace Jerome Powell as the Fed chairman. Trump has made it pretty clear that he would like to see some more interest rate cuts. Don't know if he'll be able to influence that or not. Our expectation is that when you look at those two most prominent metrics, employment and inflation, it's hard to justify substantial interest rate cuts at this time. The fear is if interest rates go down substantially, that will create demand that the economy is not ready for, and then that results in inflation. Let me pause and see if there are any questions so far. Okay. Moving along, the periodic table of investment returns is included in this quarter's report. As a quick reminder, each one of these colored boxes represents a specific asset class. The best performing asset class for each calendar year is shown across the top row here. And the next best performing beneath that, all the way to the worst performing asset class for each of those years. And then there's also a diversified portfolio that includes a mix of stocks and bonds. That's shown in this very dark gray or black box. And as you can see, it's never at the top, never at the bottom, kind of floats through the middle. Interestingly, though, if you look to the far right, we see the annualized returns for each of the asset classes in the first column and the risk. Or standard deviation in the next column. The diversified portfolio lands second from the top, but its risk is substantially lower than some of the other asset classes. Again, supporting the idea of diversification. Again, we love to see strong participation in the target date funds. I talked about the Feds. I don't want to bore you with every one of the slides in here. This is one of my favorites. I've been following this chart on the left. It's got to be 15 years. I mean, I recall looking at this certainly in 2010, 2012 era. And simply stated, this chart shows on the stacked bars on the left all of the major categories of spending that are contained in the federal budget. And so this is the federal budget that is to run through the end of September. If approved, and not delayed again. And you can see in all these major categories, it ends up to about $7 trillion in spending. On the right, we see all the sources of revenue. And you'll note that there is a box at the top that represents how much deficit there is. So in other words, Congress approved a $7 trillion budget knowing that we're anticipating about a $1.8 trillion shortfall in revenue. And so that will add, this deficit spending will add to the already over $30 trillion in debt that we have. If you're curious, does anyone know, by the way, does anyone know the last time that these two were balanced? In other words, that the spending equaled the anticipated revenue? No guesses?
1900.
1968.
Those are all good guesses.
1776.
Never.
It was actually in the very late 90s, 1999. Ever since then, we have seen administrations just spend more and more and more. The other interesting dynamic that played out as a result of deficit spending, the massive debt that we've created, I mentioned it's over $30 trillion at this point. And then when interest rates increased, the cost of serving the interest on that $30+ trillion in debt soared. And it's now, if you looked at the purple section on the left, it's 14%. And this is the first time we've ever seen the interest that we're paying on the debt that we've accumulated exceed the amount that is budgeted for defense. That's what you see in the chart over on the right. But something we're watching very closely. Obviously, we would love to see things equal out or at least get much closer. It has increased in recent years. I mentioned that I've been following this for several years, and I can recall when this section at the top on the right was as little as 10%, but it hasn't been zero in well over two decades. I'm going to move forward. I think this is an interesting one. There have been a lot of concerns recently about how expensive stocks are. In other words, their price compared to the forward-looking earnings of these companies. There's been a lot of discussion. We've certainly discussed it in capital markets reviews in the past. There's been a lot of discussion around the Magnificent Seven that are really sort of responsible for the majority of the returns in recent years of the S&P 500. And there's been this concern in comparison to, you know, is this going to get out of hand like what happened with the dot-com bubble back in the late 90s and early 2000s? And this chart does a good job of showing why maybe that's not necessarily true. What you're looking at in the sort of more steady line is the combined forward-looking earnings. So what the expected profits are going to be from these four horsemen stocks back in the 90s, and that was Microsoft, Cisco, Intel, and Dell. And then you look at the stock prices, and you see the substantial delta between anticipated profits and the stock price. And you look to what's happened recently with the Mag 7, and you see that's just not the case. So in other words, stated briefly, the expectation for earnings appears to support these very high stock prices, and it doesn't appear that we're in a situation like we were in the dot-com bubble. And then moving ahead to the heat map, you can see that there's not much heat to it. In the fourth quarter of last year, we saw mid-cap growth stocks down about 4%. It was a relatively weak quarter in general, as we stated earlier. But longer term timeframes, you know, the year was great. 3, 5, 10 years all look fantastic. The big change that we saw last year was what happened in the international space. And it didn't matter if it was value, core growth, or emerging markets. They all did well. And participants benefited from that. Moving ahead to the sector performance, fourth quarter, we saw healthcare and communications lead. Everything else was relatively small gains. And then for the year, it was communications and tech. Even industrials did quite well in 2025. The relevance here is that your mutual fund managers that overweighted communications and tech last year benefited from that. Those who underweighted those categories likely struggled. As we move ahead to your manager scorecard, overall it looks great. Couple of things I'd like to point out. T. Rowe Price growth stock at the top is a very concentrated, aggressive, large growth portfolio. It has about 54 holdings, the last release showed. It is very concentrated in technology, as you would expect. So over 50% in tech. It's been that way for some time. It really suffered during the drawdown in 2022, and that's why it was flagged for performance. It was trailing its 3- and 5-year index, as well as the peer group median. Pleased to report that performance has improved. It's now performing above median. It's not failing the 3-year time frame anymore. We recommend continued patience with this one, at least for the time being. We'll continue to monitor closely. But if it continues on its current course, we would expect that flag will be removed. JP Morgan Midcap Growth had a manager change at the co-manager level. It's not any sort of major concern. Generally, when there's a manager change, it will get flagged, and we'll monitor that for a year. The T. Rowe Price Small Cap Growth Fund, you see white boxes there. That indicates that we've removed a minor concern. They had a manager change. They also brought in T. Rowe Price's proprietary stock analytics as consideration. Historically, this was more of a quant-type management approach, where they were using essentially a computer algorithm to identify certain types of companies. And so when they brought in this proprietary stock analytics, that sort of changed their approach. We've been monitoring it. It hasn't had an impact on performance. And then the last one is the Invesco Developing Markets. This is a fund. I know that Troy and Gordon have talked about in prior meetings. It's one that we're having growing concerns with. The black indicates that we've now changed the asset-based concern from minor to major. It has lost more than 50% of its assets over the previous 12 months. What happened with this fund is a series of really just unfortunate mishaps. The manager started with a fairly large stake, a little over 10% in Russian stocks. They had to completely write that off when Russia invaded Ukraine because they couldn't trade those stocks anymore. So it was like taking a 10% position in the fund and taking all the valuations to zero. Then the manager took a pretty big stake in education stocks in China. And unfortunately, the Chinese government shortly thereafter began to crack down with some constraints on online education. And that hurt the portfolio. Then he took a big position in 2024 in Mexico stocks, mostly mining and consumer staples. And that hasn't played out well either. That manager recently resigned and was replaced with a 4-person management team. And with all of these developments, we would suggest that it at least makes sense to take a look at some other options. And if it is agreeable with the board, we'd like to bring a manager search book for the emerging markets asset class to the next meeting.
I'm good with that. Anyone else want to weigh in on that? I think the more knowledge we get, the better our decision-making is. So I'm for that.
I'm also for that. Those sound like some pretty major concerns on that fund. I know we don't like changing the funds, but I would love some information to see what's out there.
Great. Any questions on the investments or economics that I discussed? Okay.
Right.
Well, that concludes my prepared remarks. Overall, I would just end with we're very pleased with the performance of the investment menu, with the only exception being Invesco Developing Markets. So we certainly believe that some better options exist, and we'll be pleased to share that with you at the next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Item 3C, the annual update of our investment policy statement. We discussed this at our last meeting, I believe, and we did make a couple of changes. Redline through. Cassie was with us at that meeting when we had done that. I have since sign this when it was sent over to me after our last meeting. I don't know if there's any discussion that we need concerning our policy at this point. I reviewed it. Everything appears to be what we discussed as far, like I say, as far as changes go. And I'm good with where this statement stands right now. Any discussion on this?
Yeah, as a reminder, Mr. Chair, we had a vote of approval with conditional on the changes that Cassie had for a couple wording choices within that. We made those before we got that executed. So I think we're all set.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And let me see here. Okay. Next item is 3D, brokerage window service provider. I'll turn this to Troy.
Yeah. So a little bit of a recap how we got here. It was an ask at some point a while back, maybe about a quarter and a half ago, to take a look at the self-directed brokerage accounts from particularly Galloway and how they service with those employees that utilize that, and to compare it to what is currently offered as Pershing is the provider, but it's through Empower's website essentially or functionality, but under the hood is Pershing, and compare to Schwab's self-directed brokerage offering, which is called PCRE or Personal Choice Retirement Account. That evaluation is what we tried to undertake here. There's not a lot really to compare. They're pretty functionally equivalent, but we thought we'd start with just a good reminder for the group of what this entails, what it means from a fiduciary perspective. We'll go really fast. The idea here is that tier three that we show you on the investment menu every quarter, where if you have participants that didn't want one of the target date funds and didn't want to allocate their own menu selections in the center section in tier two, or they want something that's outside of what the menu offers, they can go beyond that to a self-directed brokerage window or a tunnel in some sense to now being able to invest in different things than what the menu offers. It's typically for the more sophisticated investors, those that feel or know that they are savvy enough to handle being out in the big wide world of investments. In that, they take on some personal responsibility for it. And so we note at the bottom, because we can't dictate what they're going to put in that portfolio other than setting certain limits or boundaries around it, that fiduciary obligation shifts more to the employee than it does for the rest of the menu, as is with the City of Tucson and this group in our fiduciary capacity. So if we think that out of the public space, the DOL governs corporate worlds, they've from time to time expressed reservations around that. They have concerns with letting employees kind of go out on their own. They know and we know that retirement savings is what you need for income later on. It should be something generally a little safer. That's why we haven't put everything into Trump coin or cryptocurrency or, you know, things that are offered in the marketplace as we've seen in recent days. So self-directed brokerage is a unique animal in that. We took some statistics from some of the bigger providers out there. Fidelity, 23% of plans have a self-directed brokerage option. Vanguard, about 20%. And Alight provides to a lot of smaller plans, so not as commonly seen in large asset values, but a good proportion of their small plans have that offering. The usage, though, or utilization of the accounts, best way I can put it is there's a lot more interest than there is actual usage. So people say, oh, this sounds great. I'd love to be able to do it. Really, we're talking about 2.5-3% of participants that ever really venture into that and start to put outside assets into their retirement arrangement through the plan. So what we think about, we want to understand who we're catering to. That's true of every investment, who the participant base is. Is it something that we should put in front of them? We already have it in this case. We want to avoid, say, options trading or leveraged buys, penny stocks, that kind of thing. Anything that's going to be really erratic. Depending on who's in the White House, we get different guidance as to how to handle cryptocurrency, for example, but most plans have stayed away from that as being too volatile as an offering within. There are some cryptocurrency adjacent pieces within self-directed brokerage. You'll have like Grayscale funds and others that you can buy an ETF that gets into crypto. But largely, you can't go buy Bitcoin through a brokerage window. You, as a group, have the ability to restrict the types of investments we call guardrails. And so with the form that you set up, the self-directed brokerage provision, you'll have some options to check off as to, you know, do you allow individual stocks, for example, or, you know, different types of equities, foreign and domestic, all of that. Some of the funds that are offered in the plan are going to be cheaper. We don't get quite that same scale. So the mass buying power of all the participants in aggregate gets us lower cost share classes. So ideally, we want participants to take advantage of that where they can. Just a sample here. This is what that restrictions tends to look like. You can check the boxes of which ones to not offer or to offer within that brokerage window. It generally starts with the most conservative or most common, so the mutual funds at the top. And as you proceed on through, you can see foreign stocks, you see leveraged and inverse ETFs, some more exotic trading options. We'd see rarely do you ever see this be offered to participants within a plan, but somewhere in the middle ground here is where you set those limits as to what can be invested in. So beyond the investments, if you think about the provider, which is really our topic today, it starts with, you know, what kind of investments can be made available. It's trading agreements and different pieces of that behind the scenes. They have to be able to functionally offer it administratively and whatnot. Accounts and trading fees we'll look at. They're pretty comparable in this case with some variation. Portability, if someone moves on, can they take those assets elsewhere? Or if we change in record keepers, all of that. Participant friendly is kind of where the crux of the argument here. I'll show you in just a minute some of the feedback we've gotten from the user side, and particularly in Galloway's case, in facilitating trades and things behind the scenes, some challenges with the existing provider. That's really where this request started in looking at alternatives. Pulling assets from those self-directed brokerage accounts can be a challenge. In other words, if we need to pull fees from the plan level, typically you'll put in place a limit of a certain percentage the account can be in brokerage. Because if it was 100%, we can't really go out and sell individual stocks or components of that self-directed brokerage account in order for the participant to pay fees. So that functionality needs to be there. And then are there additional trading services? Can you speak to a representative and execute those trades? Are there accommodations for that? All of that becomes a factor. So I talked about the feedback. Some of the technology has been described as limited or down. This is anecdotal at times, but it's that feedback that we got. So, you know, Innovest doesn't directly interact with Pershing or Empower on these, but what we hear from participants tends to be the squeaky wheel type stuff. Where are the challenges? Reporting doesn't interface with other platforms, so pulling it into like personal money management type software and that kind of thing has been a challenge. Trading, some functionality of trade direction and must be submitted via Excel files rather than through a more convenient or seamless process. Again, we're getting technical in how we talk about this, but on a day-to-day basis in executing trades, sometimes the functionality can be cumbersome as it is currently. And then just in a broad perspective, Galloway reported to us that few of the organizations they work with utilize Pershing. Governmental plans generally more common on the Schwab platform, so it's maybe a familiarity issue as much as anything. Comments, questions so far? We did pull together some side-by-side. Empower was nice enough to provide a lot of this, too, because they're both functional through their platform. We have Empower on the header here, but it is Pershing as well under the hood, so I'll use that a little bit interchangeably. By and large, most of these are pretty consistent across either offering as to what it can offer and how it's delivered. Website messaging that's, you know, more functionality on Empower's side to be able to handle that, so there's an opportunity there that's a little bit better on that piece. As we talk about the different types of investments offered, same here. You see the red and green is the quick read, but side by side, same columns for each of these categories. And of course, this is where we decide which of these we'd offer. It's not necessarily that because we have the brokerage window, everybody can get into every one of these types. Now we get into more text heavy side by side here, but looking at fees, costs for each of the transactions that happen. Most of these are fairly consistent, but you'll see some are slightly higher on the Charles Schwab side, the PCRA side. So, you know, transaction for mutual funds, assisted trades, non-assisted trades, broker assisted. There's lots of categories built in here. For the most part, pretty interchangeable. There's not any egregious, you know, it's not twice the fee or anything like that, but there are places where it's a little bit higher in the alternative that we're considering from Charles Schwab. On the base side, the participant record keeping fees, it is at that individual level of participants that opt in, $50 at Empower, $60 at Schwab, or about $250 in difference per quarter. So I'll stop there. Our recommendation or consideration of this is kind of a choice of relative equals. I think there's a little bit of benefit on the fee side to the Empower, the current offering that we have in place. Functionally, we know a lot of participants utilize a broker and work with that, and it seems like the avenue for that is significantly easier on the Charles Schwab side. I'd say if that's a key benefit, then making a move to PCRA from Schwab is not a big deal. So open up to the group. And then, Jeff, if anything I said sounds inaccurate, feel free to speak up. We summarize this from a lot of sources here. So add in your thoughts as necessary.
No, I'll just wait for feedback. I mean, we've gone over this topic before, so I can address any questions anybody has.
Thanks.
Dennis, if you're okay, I'd like to make a comment.
Please, Joby.
And again, this was brought to me from Galloway that does offer a lot of services to public safety. I don't really have a dog in the fight, per se. I know, just so the board is aware, talking to Jeff, that if we were to make a change, they would have to re-sign up and open up a brokerage window in Charles Schwab, the individual participant. But there would be a back-end cost on Empower side, because this was built in the original RFP, correct, Jeff?
Correct.
So I don't know where the board's landing, but I do think that we shouldn't be paying for this change. But that was something if Galloway or that vendor was open to pay for this change because it's, you know, making their lives easier, I would be open to that. But I also know I've only been contacted by that one vendor of Galloway and haven't been contacted by anybody else or any individual members.
So when you talked about a back-end cost, what would that cost? Is that costing the individual investor or is it costing our plan to make this change?
I don't know if it's going to cost your participants, Dennis, other than you see some of the trades being a little bit higher. You know, that's pretty negligent in terms of the cost, right? But when you pick up this platform off of Empower and you move over to Schwab, it's like a transition, right? You're going to have blackout periods. You're going to have notices. You're going to have to tell everybody that, you know, you're now moving from the Empower Pershing platform over to the Schwab platform. And, you know, you could be blacked out for 30 days from doing any transactions, right? So that's to keep in mind there. Additionally, you know, self-directed brokerage, you know, we're collecting those fees off of those trades. So if that stops and all those fees go to Charles Schwab, right, there is some revenue loss to Empower there. So there would be a reconsideration of taking a look at the you know, record keeping price for the city of Tucson to see if any adjustments need to be made there. Again, I'm not saying that it could be changed, but it's something that we have to explore to see how much revenue is being lost from that process.
And sorry, Jeff, I thought you'd mentioned just like the back end staff hours of Empower to facilitate this change was a cost that we were talking about as well.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So that would be also part of the transition, right? So when we take a look at recurring revenue, I'm sorry, Joby, from the self-directed brokerage, right? We have to take a look at the cost of the plan there. But additionally, there would be cost to, you know, have an off-scope project to help facilitate the move from the Empower Pershing to the Charles Schwab. I don't know what that is, Dennis, but it's probably not a couple $1,000s. It's probably going to be, you know, north of that, considering the man hours that goes into, you know, a 90-120 day transition for this.
Ooh. So, anyone else have comments on this? Absent the cost, and I'm not in the brokerage window, but reading and just looking over what Troy had just presented, and the original request, I mean, if we were to vote, I personally would be leaning towards Charles Schwab. And I think that this page here is, when I got the trading challenges, that caught my eye. Rolf, do you have a comment?
You're muted, Rolf.
Okay. I guess I'm trying to fully understand it. How is, Galloway involved in this?
So Galloway tends, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Joby, you go ahead.
So Galloway approached me and just said they have about 70 members that they manage with the city of Tucson that are in the brokerage window. And asking Jeff, it sounds like we have a little less than 100 members in the brokerage window. So they manage 3/4 of the people using the window. And they say that the back-end software and trading is difficult for them. And that also some of the public safety people in tier 3, PSPRS pension already have, an account with them that offers Charles Schwab, as the independent brokerage window. So it was kind of combining all that. That's how they approached me with it.
Yeah. I think well described. If I can just add a comment there.
Yeah.
The list that we've got on page here, it was about 3 times as long from what Galloway provided. We kind of filtered that through to see what actually made sense. Our objective here is to look out for participants. And indirectly, if Galloway struggles with it, then those participants are presumably affected as well. But we wanted to separate, you know, what is of value to people in the plan versus just what's of ease for Galloway in their functionality. So that's a little bit of the metrics here in what we evaluated. Sorry, Ralph, go ahead.
And the fees are a little higher in Schwab, correct? Is that what we're getting?
In some places, yes.
And I'm not sure, I mean, I have my own brokerage account, but what is there certain, is this the breakdown of the cost of everything?
These are the transactional fees. On the next page is where the ongoing, so everybody that has a brokerage account, there's a base fee taken out quarterly, and that's just slightly higher for Schwab against in the Pershing and Power offering.
And then could you just back up one?
Sure.
So is there a cost per trade, or is that fee cover any trades that are being made in there?
Go ahead. If you do the electronic node transfer, that's a no fee on each one of them.
Right.
Yeah, Rolf, everyone gets the $50 annual maintenance fee. Like, that's just website maintenance, all that other stuff. These are individual transactions that participants decide to transact within the plan. And, Rolf, I think for higher context, so the brokerage window for Tucson has a feature that allows a third-party advisor to manage funds within the self-directed brokerage. That's where all this stems from, right? Galloway is a prominent public safety advisor that works with a lot of plans in Arizona. So when this sort of idea of allowing a third-party broker to come in and manage the money started within deferred compensation plans, right? The two players were Schwab and TD Ameritrade. Schwab bought TD Ameritrade.
Right.
So then it was the Schwab. So Galloway got himself down to one platform just working with Schwab. Empower creates their own product, and now it's a separate process for him. And that's where all this is stemming from, is that all his other plans he's doing you know, Schwab, it's easy, convenient. This is a separate process for them. It's a little bit different. We're still getting used to it. We're still going through challenges. So understand where he's coming from, but understand, you know, that he wants to streamline it. But I don't know necessarily, it's up to you guys to determine whether or not streamlining that process is worth the work that goes into the change.
And if that change happened, whenever they have whatever stocks or individual stocks or ETFs or whatever they have invested in, that will automatically transfer to Schwab then?
Yeah, we would do an in-kind transfer. Yep.
Okay. But there's going to be a point, a period where people won't be able to access their funds because if you know, whatever, depending on how often they do it or if they're managing it daily or
yeah.
So just trading, like how, et cetera.
Exactly. So just like when a plan moves record keepers like Tucson did 6 years ago, 7 years ago, right, there's going to be a period where we have to stop all transactions to reconcile with the Empower Pershing, pick it up, move it over to Schwab, reconcile with Schwab, and then open it back up.
And is there anything that could, I'm sorry for interrupting you, is there anything that could be put out to those 100 people that basically some type of survey or educational thing to make a determination of what, you know, getting some feedback back from those people that are mainly affected by this?
Yeah, I'm saying it could be done, but when you have 70 out of 100 with Galloway, I think the direction from Galloway is, right, he's going to ask these people to provide a certain amount of feedback, and it's going to be skewed.
Okay.
I don't want to go through that exercise knowing that we may not get some, you know. Again, I'm not trying to fight this. I'm just trying to put out where it's stemming from.
I would think most participants in the don't think about it a lot. They probably wouldn't respond to a survey, and it would give us limited utility. But
okay.
Is this something we want to vote on today? I'll throw it out to the board. I mean, I look at this, again, I'm not in the window. This is not costing the plan anything since these fees are to the individual investor. The only cost of the plan that I'm perceiving right now is going to be the time that Empower would take for the reconciliation. I also think if I was an investor, and of course we're looking at about 90 people, but I want to think that there might be something with the timing, with the way the market has been moving. I mean, people that are in self-directed brokerage, of course, are more savvy, but they might also be, whoa, 30, 60-day blackout window, I can't trade. That might put a stymie on them thinking, oh, yeah, I really do want to get to Schwab to make it easier later, but what's the cost to them for possible gains or maybe even possible losses during a blackout period?
I think as long as it's educated up front that they give it have an opportunity to take those funds out before that's done, I think it's probably fine because that's their option.
Ah, okay. Lisa?
I'm not sure if city pension staff or team would be affected by this or if how laborious it'll be, but I just want to make sure that we have the bandwidth to be able to take this on also. So I would like to be able to learn more about the process of this before we vote on it.
Yeah. So, Lisa, you bring up a good point. There would be some, you know, time spent with your staff. I mean, we have to change the service agreement for the entire plan. There'd be some new brokerage paperwork to fill out. There's some transition paperwork to fill out. There's going to be communications that need to be reviewed. you know, it's like if you've ever been part of a transition, Lisa, that's normal course of business, right? Except we're just doing one portion of this. It's not the entire plan. So there will be some, I would say, probably less responsibility and time involved. Yeah. But again, you know, there's probably to start off, there's going to be a weekly call at least for an hour to get through some of these things until we can get to a good spot. Yeah.
Dawn.
Would it make sense to defer action on this? And Jeff, if you could get some numbers on what that revenue or contract change might incur, and then project timing, including blackout. And then the ask following that might be to Galloway if they would consider funding some of the cost, if that's an option. Those two open questions might dictate a little bit more where we land.
Yeah, completely open to that.
So based on what Jeff said just a little bit ago, it sounds like Cassie would also be involved, and Cassie is a significant cost.
She would definitely need to be involved.
Well, we might as well put all the costs out on the table. I mean, we can't make a decision without full knowledge, so
mm-hmm.
I guess we'll get her involved in this also. So, I think we've gone over this a bit. Anyone else have any comments, questions for Jeff or Troy regarding this? And
I just want to say, Troy, thank you for putting that together and meeting with Galloway so we could have the information to the board. I appreciate that.
Yeah, good discussion. Thank you, everybody.
Okay, so we will table this till our next meeting. Does that sound good to the rest of the board? Okay. Okay, Rick, Troy, thank you for your help and time. We are up to item 4, the Empower Quarterly Reports. Jeff, you're up.
All right, let me know if you can see my screen.
I'm good.
Perfect. All right, so let's go through the plans for the fourth quarter. I'll start. If you guys are following, I'm in the board document, so I'm on page 95 if you're following along. If not, I'll scroll through here. Going to start on page 7 here. So as you can see here, I'm sorry, I want to make sure I'm in the right spot. I'm going to back that up. Page 91. I'm sorry, jumped ahead. Going to get a high-level overview of all three plans together. So at the end of the fourth quarter, we're at about $356.7 million for all three plans. And participants with a balance is at 4,238. Broken out between that number, we've got active participants of 2,533 and are separated from service participants of 1,705. We look at the average balance across all three plans. We're about 84,186, slightly up from that 84,030 we saw at the end of the third quarter. Rick, you said it pretty well there. We saw the heat map, even though it was in the green, it wasn't very hot for the fourth quarter. So that's why we're just seeing that, you know, smaller increase in the average account balance for all three plans. Moving on specifically to the 457. This is the lion's share of all the plans. We got $350.2 million at the end of the fourth quarter. Altogether with plan level assets, $427,759. Added to that, we have $350.6 million. I think I saw an item on the agenda talking about the invoices for the fee holiday. So as a reminder, that ends on June 30th. So if we're going to have a broader discussion about extending it, we can, but just giving you an idea that that will end. And then moving on to the right hand side there, participants in the 457 is 4,193. Again, broken out by active and separated, we have 2,525 active and 1,668 separated. Specifically to the 457, average account balance is $83,525. Again, slightly higher, below that benchmark of $92,132 for 457 plans in the same category between 50 and 500 million. Moving on to this middle section here, just a breakdown of how participants are utilizing investment strategies. We see a number of things there. We see My Total Retirement, which is the managed accounts, at about 27.6%. Online advice, which is a new feature for Empower that came about last year, is about 1.3%. Again, this is an opportunity for participants to get their portfolio balanced one time at no charge using the same methodology from Morningstar. So participants are taking advantage of that. We can continue to see that to grow. Target date strategy being the number one strategy, 31.1%. Heard from Rick on this, right? Like, participants who do it themselves, again, don't have a large allocation to international, but those folks that did within the target date fund window, within the target date fund, really played out well for them. So we're seeing some of that growth throughout the year for participant balances based off of having some of that allocation in the target date. Then we've got a risk-based strategy at 0.1. Brokerage strategy, we just talked about 100 people at 2.3%. And then we have your do-it-yourselfers at 37.8%. What I love to see about this do-it-yourself number for the city of Tucson is this, at least for the plans that I service in Arizona and California, this is one of the lower numbers that I see for do-it-yourselfers, right? So the fact that you've got the majority of your plan in the target date or managed accounts, online advice, et cetera, right, getting some type of help for their portfolio, it is great to see. And we're going to continue to hopefully whittle down those do-it-yourself participants as well to help them get in the right allocation for themselves. Moving on to page 9, account registration. Stayed flat at about 84%. We've got 3,540 out of the roughly 4,200 participants have registered their account online. Why that's important, again, from a security purpose and then also an engagement purpose, right? Are we getting people to aggregate outside accounts, get a full financial wellness picture? Those are the things that we strive for every day. We'll take a moment here. Don't have any information yet, but we are doing a website refresh. We started to work on it in the middle of last year, and we're getting ready to roll out some announcements. So government, the anticipated rollout is May. So I don't know if we'll have our first quarter meeting in the second quarter to review those stats yet, whether we'll be live yet. But if not, depending on what day we land on, I'll send some information to the committee on what the new experience will look like. I think we were going to have some videos, et cetera, too, to get some an idea of what it will be. But I think one of the cool features now is when participants are looking at investments, right, we offer what we call an investment option at a glance, right? It's just basically a look back at the performance all the way to 10 years for, performance of funds within your plan. That section is now going to be more interactive. It's going to be electronic. You're going to be able to take two funds and compare them, much like a modern platform would. So let's say you're looking at, I don't know, two mid-cap funds, and you're trying to decide which one you think is good for you as a do-it-yourselfer, you'd be able to click on both funds, compare returns, right, compare risk, all of those other good things, and then make a good determination as to what fund you want to be in within your portfolio. So, again, a little bit more interactive and helping participants make educated choices around their investments.
Do you ever listen to names of people that participate in the Feed the Children?
Again, Ralph, I couldn't hear you.
Next, Sam, what do you think?
I don't even know if it's working.
I know Sam was there. I know there's a picture on social media, but I don't even know.
I think he's on.
I'm going to mute him.
Hey,
yeah,
Ralph. There you go.
I muted him.
Thanks.
Yeah, I thought he asked a question. Moving on to lifetime income score. Median is at 65% for the plan, beating that benchmark of 63, so fantastic to see there. Again, this is a measure of how well participants are on track to replace the income they had while working. Moving to cash flow, paying attention to the right-hand side here. We started again the quarter about $349.9 million. We had about $4 million in contributions, about $10 million in disbursements, which is generally a fourth quarter number for a lot of plans, not the 10 million, but it's higher than normal quarters, right? We've got de minimis force outs. We have RMDs. We have all that good stuff that come out in the last quarter, generally driving up those, distributions, towards the end of the year. One thing that I did notice when I took a look at the numbers, there was a large amount of rolling to qualified plans, not IRAs and brokers and things like that, but a lot of folks taking their money. They've gone to a new employer and they're rolling these funds within the Tucson plan to that new employer, you know, wherever it may be. So I'm seeing, you know, Nationwide, Mission Square, et cetera. So there was a little bit of an anomaly there for the fourth quarter. Moving on to contribution rate, average for the plan is 7.1%, just slightly below that benchmark of 7.3%. So pretty much right in line there. When I take a look at the difference between the third quarter and fourth quarter and participants changing contributions, nothing really sticks out as, you know, too concerning. Do love to see that, you know, in the 2 and 3%, right, we saw relatively flat, but when we get to the 4%, we see some down. But we see a big jump in the 5%. So again, from a behavior standpoint, I'm just thinking hopefully that people are changing from that 4 to 5% or 4 to 6% because we had a nice little uptick in both of those categories there. So good behavior for participants on that end. And when we look at like 8, 9, 10, and 11%, 8 and 9%, as you can see, are a little bit down. Generally, what we see here is like we've got some right, folks who have been with the city for a long time, they've retired, they've been contributing as much as they can before they retire, and they've fallen off that 8 or 9, 10, 11% bucket. So, again, those aren't necessarily people moving in the wrong direction for their decreasing their contributions. It could be more of just, hey, they separated from service, and we no longer have that contribution on file for them anymore. So, but overall, I don't see anything drastic there again because the average is pretty much staying in line with what you guys have had previously. Money type utilization, 1,776 individuals in the before tax bucket. We have 423 in the Roth only, and then we have 203 in the multiple types there. So what's interesting about Tucson here is that generally we see this average age in the multiple types below the Roth and the before tax only, but this one here is a little bit higher here in the average age. So that's interesting to see, but you can see their average balance is about 61,000. And generally the median lifetime income score is a little bit higher because you've got both those amounts working for people to play with their tax bracket in retirement. But here in this case, a little bit different. It's almost in line with the Roth there for the city of Tucson. So that stood out to me as a different behavior for the city of Tucson. Contribution activity. If we take a look at this top line, right, these year to date contributions in participant before tax was about 13.8 million. We had 2.1 in participant Roth, and then we had 510,000 in other. These are rollovers into the plan. Generally, we see when people roll over from their qualified plan into the city of Tucson from another employer, they're smaller balances. So there were a lot of transactions, but just a small average account balance for this category here. And then that brings us to that total of about 16.4, almost 16.5 million coming into the plan. Distribution activity. These are all the reasons for folks taking money from the plan. Lots of different reasons, right? With the passing of a lot of new legislation over the past decade or so, there's a number of additional reasons that you can get access to your money. So we can see them all here. We've got separation of service, your RMDs, you have your in-service, which is now at 59.5, or potentially any rollover money that folks have brought in. They can also take that money out at any time. There's about 140 transactions there. Hardship, 18, service credits, 9 for about almost $900,000. We've got Secure Act that could have been qualified birth and adoption, for your plan. We had Quadros, distributions due to death, and then we had other about $383,000. So altogether about 2,400 transactions for the year. Now, I will caveat that. That is not unique participants taking money from the plan. That is actually the number of transactions taking place. So if you were a participant that had both before tax, Roth money, and potential rollover money, and you took a distribution for $1,000, that's going to count as three different transactions because you took money from three different transaction types pro rata. So again, not 2,400 unique participants, but those are transactions across those participants. Loan, it's going to move to page 107 if you're following along. Nothing stands out here in terms of loan activity for the quarter. We had 20 new loans in October, 16 in November, 22 in December. Generally about right in line with what we see for the city of Tucson. So nothing, again, nothing stands out there. I want to jump to advisory services. So again here, just another way for participants to get their portfolio balanced for them on a regular basis based off of the information we have on the system. We know that just getting into the program and not personalizing it, right, is not what we want to see. We want to engage people and get them to enter more information so we can get a better personalized portfolio for them. And that's where we start to jump out to the next page right here. So on the right-hand side there, you can see 59% of participants have confirmed or further personalized inputs. So that's about 680 out of about the 1,100 members that are in managed accounts. This slide just kind of gives us, you know, what we have in our system to start with. So a pretty good starting point. But again, we want that additional information, and that's where the next two slides come into play. So you can see here, 20% of participants have confirmed and kept the default value for at least one of the inputs shown on the left, right? So you've got your retirement age, right? We have a default. You can change that. Your retirement need, you can change your income. Do you want other accounts to come into play? Pension is a big one, right? So you can see there 334 people have adjusted their pension to be customized to themselves. And then Social Security, right? So we've got an additional 366 that have confirmed adjusting their Social Security if they're having, if it's applicable to both, right? Having the pension as well as Social Security. So good. All the way there, you can see if 54.8% of members customize the value for at least one of the inputs shown. And then moving on to the next here, we've got about 459 participants have provided at least a value for one of the inputs shown on the left. So again, adding expenses into our website. If you've done that feature, it's great. If you start to put in, you know, I've got this car bill every month, or I've got this credit card bill, my mortgage, right? Those are expenses that all go into this that help personalize the portfolio. So we've got people entering expenses. Folks are entering other income. This doesn't necessarily mean pension here, right? This is going to be outside assets, outside of a pension, other IRAs, maybe other 457s they haven't brought in. And then you can see it rolls into spousal income as well too. You can have that accounted for in your portfolio. And then we've got risk constraints there, of 39. So again, if somebody says, hey, this portfolio man, that managed accounts is building for me is too aggressive and I want it to be more moderate or conservative, they can put that risk constraint on if they want to. And then we've got obviously life expectancy. So I think we go out to like 92 or 93 in terms of life expectancy. There are some folks that unfortunately do have some, you know, illnesses, or just from knowing family history, they kind of knock that down a little bit lower, right? So they can account for that as well too. Okay, going to jump to the ECEs to close out the 457, which is our Empower Communications engine. Again, just showing here that we've got every single communication on for the City of Tucson participants. So this is great. We engage with them in a number of different ways, from the point that they're enrolling to, you know, throughout their career, taking a look at saving and investing, right? And then obviously using all the tools that we have on the website there. So how this plays out, and I usually jump just to this last page here. This is page 137, right? We can see we've got 277 new participants with a balance within the plan. About 492 have added or updated their phone number or email address, higher than last year, which is great. 449 have registered their account online. 536 have added or updated their beneficiary. So good, all important things when starting your account. When we go to the saving and investing, 458 have increased their deferral election, right about in line with what we saw last year. 51 have moved to using a guided investment strategy. Again, that could be your target date or your online advice. 142 enrolled in My Total Retirement, and then 161 have additionally personalized a new category in their managed account profile. So again, good engagement from the emails, the mailings, and the pop-ups that we do on the website. But altogether on the right-hand side there, you can see 2,114 have engaged with the website, app, or a call representative. 134 have set up their personal dashboard, and 26 consolidated assets within the plan for the year. So that's about, that's that 510,000 number I showed you in the other category in the contributions. Any questions on the 457?
Jeff, I just had a quick comment.
Sure.
I wanted to say on this engagement here, the City of Tucson Retiree Association, which is mainly made up of people in TSRS, had their holiday luncheon, and Keenan came out and was a big hit. There was probably 70 people there, and I know he touched a lot of people, but I just wanted to give him accolades. I know Lisa was there and saw him work, so he was a good job there, and appreciate him working.
Yeah, thanks, Shelby, and thanks for coordinating that. When you reached out, I think, and I told him about it, he's like, yeah, that's exciting. Would love to do it, right? Because it's not that often you get 70 folks in a room, especially retirees, right? Being able to have those conversations. Those are the people that we try to touch, but sometimes they're hard to get to because they're not employees of the city anymore, so we can't see them at departments, you know, in different places. So really, really appreciate you coordinating that. And yes, he expressed that he had a good time. He got a lot of activity from it, got a lot of appointments from it, and was able to help a number of individuals. Okay, going to jump to the 401A. Not going to go into it too much detail. We had about $5.1 million in the 401A at the end of the fourth quarter. Still 40 participants at the end of the year. And then if I jump, I didn't grab this page. We're just taking a look at the 401A executives. We've still got five 401A executives in there for about $1.3 million for that plan. Any questions around the stats for Tucson plans? Okay. I'm sure it's in here. Let me find it. If I can't find it readily available, I can just speak to it. Oh, perfect. It's in here. Got the Empower quarterly update. You know, a lot of good stuff in here, but what I wanted to call out is that Dawn and Lisa and team have worked hard on this Secure 2.0 provision for folks that make over $150,000 in FICA wages. So we have worked on that. We've got our processes in place. So if any of these folks, again, are hitting that threshold and their contributions need to be changed to Roth, we will be doing that as they approach those limits throughout the year. So just wanted to give them some credit for working with Celeste, my internal counterpart, on the administrative part of this to make sure that the City of Tucson was in compliance.
Give credit to Don. Don did a great job.
Don, gotcha.
Don, all right. Kudos.
All right, Mr. Chair, that's my update.
All righty, Jeff, thank you. Anyone have any comments, questions for Jeff before we move on? Okay, thank you. Item five, Administrative discussions. The first one is for the fee holiday invoices. This is way down page 201 of our packet for a couple pages. By the board granting the fee holiday for the membership, we're looking at $42,000 plus dollars that will come out of our administrative fund to cover that expense. So real quick, Jeff, so it really is four times as much. Is this a quarterly invoice?
That's quarterly, correct. And
Got it. So
these invoices get generated, but these have already been deducted from the plan expense accounts. So there's nothing for you to do here. I think this is just more of an FYI.
Oh, okay.
But it does sort of spur the conversation about the fee holiday ending on June 30th, right? So you've had the fee went into effect really July 1st of 2025, right? So we took third quarter's fee in the fourth quarter after we do all the average account, you know, everything closes out. Then we took the fourth quarter fee in this first quarter, right? So we've taken, I think it was about $42,000 and $41,000 respectively from the plans. So knocking it down, knocking that plan expense account down about $83,000 or so. Currently, I can give you a quick update right now as of yesterday. Right. There's still $396,000 in the plan expense account.
So Jeff, just to refresh my memory. We did a fee holiday for a year and I thought it was going to cost us about $160,000 for the
yes.
total plan. Is that correct?
Yeah. And, so there's, go ahead.
And I was going to say, what do you remember what our account balance was starting?
Last I remember when Art was still here, I have the number 432,000 in my head because that's when we started thinking, hey, we've got a big, you know, plan assets. And I think that's how we got to doing this, fee holiday. But, you know, if we're looking at like 170,000 for last year and now our new balance is 396, that's something that I think we should have a discussion on at our next meeting.
Yeah, so remember, we haven't taken two fees yet, so we've got to take this first quarter, which would be, let's call it another 41,000, 42,000, right?
Right.
And then in the third quarter, we'll take the second quarter's fee, so that'll be another 40. So we've only taken about 83. We still need to take another 83, right? So this could knock it down to, not including interest, you know, gaining back like low 300,000s, right? But Putnam Stable Value has been doing a fantastic job. I think they were close to like 4% last year. So you're getting 4% on 400,000. That's, you know, pretty good chunk of change that keeps propping it back up.
Right. Well, at least I think this will be an item on the agenda for the May meeting. But hey, thanks because,
We'll do that. I also, I believe this is where I'm going to also be moving or getting reimbursement for all the travel. That's all the travel expenses, right, Jeff? For DC?
Or,
the DC board?
That's correct, Lisa.
Yes.
When I get the expenses from Angelica, I submit a form to Celeste to get reimbursed.
Okay. So, I have a list of those expenses, but I'm still figuring it out on my end where to put those, and accounting's taken a long time on our end. It's just our fault. So I do have those things to get reimbursed. It's not enough to make a dent, but.
Yeah. No, so, and the other thing
You just got.
Sorry. The other thing that comes out of the expense account is the new enrollees, the $50 they get for enrolling. So again, doesn't make a big dent, but it's something that's coming out of there.
Okay.
Right. Oh, along those lines too, the mail outs for the elections are coming out of there as well.
And that does cost quite a bit.
Right.
Yeah. So the last board one we did was, I can't remember the email. It was like 17,000 to mail to the 4,000 people or something like that.
That's what I recall from the email too.
Yeah. So you can expect that to be roughly the same for this go around.
Okay.
So
Dennis,
I just have
a quick clarification.
$300,000 when all's said and done.
Yeah.
Okay.
And $16,000 in interest. So yeah, you'll be above $300,000, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Dawn. Go ahead.
That's okay. I just have a clarification question on the future agenda item. Did you want it to be about discussing continuing the fee holiday or just the account balance in general?
I would think maybe the fee holiday. I only say that because if we end up, let's just say we have $300,000 and we do another fee holiday for $170,000, we've really put a big dent in our expense or in our account. So it's just something for us to consider.
Okay. So the reason I'm asking for clarification is because the wording is going to be important. If the agenda item is only about discussing extending the fee holiday, that's all you can talk about.
Right.
Okay, just making sure.
And Lisa and Dawn, you'll bring us some of these stats. Because I really think, for at least for me, if we've got a number, okay, it's mid-May, here's how much we have. That could give us some leeway. You know, maybe we have a fee holiday, maybe we don't, maybe we have a partial fee holiday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If it's, you know, it is plan assets, and then it's just like, what do we want to do with that? But we want to be mindful of not getting crazy with spending it down to where something comes up in the future and we don't have those assets.
Okay.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is the elections process. Lisa, do you and Dawn want to talk on this?
So I believe we have three members whose appointments are going to be expiring.
Who are they?
Don, it's Dennis. I think Joby, right?
So I believe Joby and, well, let me look. I think it's Jason and Rolf are already expired and Dennis expires in April. Yes.
Sorry, Joby.
Yeah, Jason and Rolf expired last. Yeah, Jason and Rolf's terms expired in January and Dennis's expires in April.
Okay.
And these are, I want to make sure, because I think I have a problem on mine when I was put in. The committee says it's a 4-year term, our new council, but mine was only listed as a 3-year term when I looked back at the paperwork that I signed. And I thought Jason and Rolf, sorry, I thought it was a 4-year term based on the change in the ordinance.
Yeah, I'm confused there too.
I can follow up with the clerk's office because I'm to answer your question, I pulled up the roster and there's a lot of stuff that doesn't look right on here to me. So I'll follow up with the clerk's office.
Okay. Yeah, and I was going to ask that from you, Dawn or Lisa, if we could just get maybe an email out to the board to show what the dates are of expiring and when, like Dennis, how long you've been chairman for. I think it's been 3 years now, if I'm not mistaken.
We've been having to do a little cleanup with the board. So, that's not a problem. So we'll get it straightened out and before we do the election process to make sure we got everybody's terms corrected. And but we do know that we're pretty sure about the expired terms. Troy?
Yeah, I don't know if it helps for context. My recollection is that Art was attempting to stagger some of the board terms so that it didn't all fall at the same time. So there, it might be that there's a mismatch because of trying to shorten or extend in order to fit that so it wasn't all synced up.
Oh, I don't know if he was could do that.
Yeah, well, I think we did a lot of stuff when we had the ordinance change.
Okay, we'll double check on that.
I'll check because I keep notes. I might have, that was like 2 years ago now, 3 years ago. I might still have handwritten notes on specifically what we did there.
Okay.
And I'm sure Cassie does.
Actually, she helped us with the other, with the TSRS board and helped us figure that one out. Right. So, So. Right.
So, okay. So as far as the election goes, I know that Empower has all the names and excellent contact information for the retirees. Last time, the notice for the call for candidates was sent out through Empower. But then we also, I guess the city would send out for the active duties because now we have two different populations voting on two different categories of committee members. So you'll get that ball rolling, and then you'll call a special executive meeting for us to get together to approve the slate of candidates. And then tangentially, we'll talk about what was that other issue we're going to talk about?
The contract with Innovest.
That's right.
Yes. Don, did you have something?
Yeah, I was going to say we've already gotten the ball rolling on sending out the solicitation notices. Anticipated deadline to get those back is March 6th. So, I mean, based on that, you guys could hold your special meeting as early as March 19th to approve candidates.
Okay.
Can I just want to make sure, because I was sworn in February of 25, so I've only been actually sworn in for a year. But I remember I actually lost to Dennis running with him, and I thought that was only 2 years prior. So before we send out mailers that cost money, Don, can we make sure what the terms were when the ordinance changed? I feel like we're like 1 year ahead, but I could be wrong.
Sure. So on the roster, I show your appointment date as February 2025 and your expiration date is February 2028.
So that would be wrong because the ordinance says they're 4 year terms. And so I'm just wondering if everyone got assigned a 3 year term instead of 4 year. If that makes sense.
I can double check.
Yeah, before the ordinance was changed, because I happen to have a letter from the clerk for me in January of 2019, and I was assigned a 3 year. But then again, that's before the ordinance change. So
I think the ordinance changed it to 4 years, so I think that we might be not expired with Jason and Rolf and Dennis.
So does, I guess. I'm just trying to follow here. So did Jason and Rolf get appointed before the ordinance change or after the ordinance change? And does that play a factor?
Well, they the ordinance after. Does say this okay. is going to happen after. I mean, it addresses the fact that there was a change and then the changes would be made subsequent to the ordinance. Let's see.
So the roster that I have shows that both Jason and Rolf have start dates of January 2023.
I'm searching my computer now. I am 99.9% that my paperwork from the clerk was a 4 year term. I don't even remember a discussion of 2-year terms. And I was involved in the ordinance change. I'm desperately searching for the ordinance on my computer right now because it's pretty clear. That should be an easy Google.
Okay, I'll follow up with them. Just be aware, you guys, that the dates on this roster were provided by the clerk's office a few months ago when I asked for them. But I will follow up, and I will look up the ordinance, and we'll figure it out.
So if you have Jason listed as January of 23, and let's just say it's a 4-year term, that would take us to January of 27, correct?
Yes.
Yes, but what the roster says is that he started in 23 and expires in 26.
Sounds like a clerk issue. So, yeah, if you can just give us clarification, and then we'll put out the feelers for candidates once we determine specifically. I mean, I know mine is up. I've got my letters from the clerk that say April 6th, you're done. So
Don,
Lisa, and yeah.
Sorry, when it comes to the mailing, what do you want me to do?
We can get it verified and with the city clerk's office, and we'll try to get that done in the next couple days. When did the mail outs already go out? We can do that in the next few days.
Yeah, Celeste provided a mailing list to Nikki today, so
okay.
That's going to trigger Nikki to start moving. So I can tell her to pause for 2 business days and then give her an update. Well, are you guys closed on Monday as well, too, for the holiday?
Yeah. So I was going to say maybe we can give you an update by Tuesday.
Okay.
Jeff, when the meeting's over, I will go up to the clerk's office and actually chase someone down. I'll do my very best to get you an answer today.
You're the best. Awesome. Yeah. Like, I just don't want the mailers to
stop anything.
People only have 3 days to fill it out or whatever and feel rushed.
Yeah. Then we will email everyone with verification.
So I get clarification. Jeff Empower is going to send the solicitation out to the retirees, and then Lisa, your office sends it out to the active duty for the active election. Or is Empower doing all of it?
We're doing all of it, Dennis.
They're doing all of it.
Got it. Okay. Hence the 2-day delay. Got it. Okay. Yeah. Otherwise, I know I'm up.
Unless we get it. Unless we get, clarification today, then we won't have to delay anything.
Dennis, they'll also be, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, they'll also be sending out the ballots once those are ready for us.
Sending out the, what do you mean by that? Like, they'll give you an invoice. Yeah.
Right. No, I mean, like, once we have our candidates ready to go, we'll put together the information we want on the ballots. I believe last time Art sent you guys the ballots, you guys did the mail outs. And then, just like with the solicitations, the results came back to us here at City Hall.
Yeah. You know what? I didn't read your letters. Did you have the return back to you guys?
Yes.
Okay.
The return should be back to Lisa.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. As long as that's on there, then participants know where to send it.
Excellent. Okay, everybody. That was fun. So, any other questions, comments, ideas for agenda items for the next meeting beyond the couple that we have? If not, everyone have a great weekend. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. Nice to meet you all.
Bye. Yep.
Take care.
See you, Rick.
Bye-bye.
You.